Hello everyone, this is Kath Mudford with this week's edition of Bygone Days. This week I have part two of the story of the murder of Mr. William Wood of Aylmer in Derbyshire. We left the story with 17-year-old Charles Taylor being taken to New Bailey Prison. Charles Taylor, the person apprehended at the Greyhounds public house, was discovered about 1 o'clock on Friday afternoon by Mr. Evans, the turnkey, at the New Bailey, suspended on the stovepipe which crosses the room where he was confined. The wretched murderer, it appears, had tied his stockings together and with the assistance of his gaiters was enabled to make them sufficient for the fatal purpose. He was not quite dead when found, but had so far effected his fatal purpose that he died on Sunday morning about 3 o'clock. An inquest was held before John Milne, Esquire, coroner, at the Dangerous Corner Public House, Long Millgate, and a verdict returned of fellow de se, which is an archaic legal term for suicide. Some 3 weeks after William's murder, the Manchester Mercury reported that another of the suspects had been arrested at Liverpool's Salthouse Dock. We are happy to inform our readers that another of the miscreants, Joseph Dale, supposed to be concerned in this cruel and barbarous murder, has been apprehended at Liverpool. It appears he had attempted to enlist and was taken on board the Mary of Great Yarmouth, lying in the Salthouse Dock by the active and laudable exertions of Sergeant Major Eyre of the recruiting staff at Liverpool. On Friday, Mr. Lavender, our worthy deputy constable, went over and on Saturday returned with his prisoner and lodged him in our New Bailey prison. Yesterday, he was removed to Whaley, where he will undergo an examination before a magistrate of that district, and from thence be conveyed to Chester Castle to take his trial. Platt, the other accomplice, has not yet been taken. The trial of Joseph Dale for the murder of William Wood took place at Chester Castle. One of his co-accused, Charles Taylor, had already hung himself in the prison a few weeks earlier. Dale pleaded not guilty. Among the Macclesfield people to appear as witnesses were Ellen Broadhurst, landlady of the Golden Lion in Macclesfield, who testified that 3 young men came to her house. One left and returned with a paper parcel. The men put on new stockings and half-boots, then went into a room to change their clothes. They left, leaving behind a black coat, striped waistcoat, 2 pairs of trousers, and a torn muslin handkerchief. And John Longstaff, an apprentice to Mr. Latham, a Macclesfield watchmaker. He said that 2 men in blue coats, blue trousers, and yellow waistcoats came to his master's shop, and he sold them each a watch. The one paid for his watch in a Macclesfield note and 7 shillings in silver. The other, the taller, paid in a £5 Bank of England note. The witness took the note to Brocklehurst Bank to get changed, leaving the 2 men in the shop with Elizabeth Tomlinson, the housekeeper. Mrs. Tomlinson corroborated the evidence of Longstaff. The prisoner was one of the persons who was there. He was the taller of the 2. Here, the evidence for the prosecution closed, and the prisoner in his defence said he was innocent of the murder and had nothing further to say. George Hughes, stucco manufacturer of Manchester, George Burgess, formerly of Knutsford and later constable of Bucklow, and George Henshall, cotton spinner, severely gave the prisoner the character of being a very peaceable, quiet lad, always good-tempered and kind to his parents. At 5:30 in the evening, the learned judge, Mr. Justice Warren, commenced summing up the evidence and stated to the jury what was necessary to constitute a murder, proceeded to recapitulate the evidence with great precision, and concluded his remarks with observing that in this case a most barbarous murder had been committed by someone, and the question was not whether the prisoner was the man who struck the blow. It was, by at the time aiding and abetting or consenting to the deed, he was equally guilty in point of law as if he had actually inflicted the mortal wound. The evidence which had been brought forward as to character could be of no avail where the facts proved were of such a nature to be conclusive of guilt. And, considering all the circumstances of the case, It remained for them to judge whether, in their opinion, the prisoner was guilty of the crime laid to his charge or not. The jury, after a consultation of about 2 minutes duration, returned a verdict of guilty. The prisoner heard the awful decision without any apparent emotion. The Macclesfield Courier of 24th of April 1824 included the judge's final remarks to Dale and described the condemned man's reaction. "You prevaricated so much in the statements you made as to make it impossible not to believe you were guilty of the crime you were charged with. It is a painful and most lamentable thing to observe a young man of your early life thus broken from your present existence, through you having associated with the most abandoned characters, and your unhappy and disgraceful fate will, it is hoped, be a warning to all young men to take care of the company they fall into. The last advice that can be given to you is seriously to prepare yourself for your transit to another world, for no hopes of mercy can be given you in this. A clergyman will attend to you, giving you that spiritual assistance which your unfortunate situation requires. In this world, your hopes are closed, and on Wednesday next, your mortal existence must end." The judge then, in the solemn words of the law, sentenced him to be hung on Wednesday, and his body to be given over to the surgeons for dissection. When the concluding words of "The Lord have mercy on your soul" were pronounced, the prisoner looked fervently up to heaven, and in a trembling voice said, "Amen." Well, that's quite a tale, isn't it? And once again, I'd like to thank David Stirling from the Goyt Valley website, which is goyt-valley.org.uk, for letting me use this story. That's it for Cath for this week. Bye!